Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, everybody, welcome. West Point, Mississippi, home of the Gamekeeper Studio, Mossy Oak Brand Camo. Lanny, this one is going to be a good one.
Yeah, we're talking turkeys and talking turkey sounds.
With a guy who really knows
turkey sounds. Yeah, the master, no doubt about it.
Yep. And so Dudley's got a book in front of him. You may hear today, we may mention, hey, this is in, it's all in Brent's book, Yelp and Gobble.
So yep. Brent Rogers.
Brent Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
So he released it at the NWTF show. So that's the book we'll be talking about when Mike's, he may say, yeah, it's in the book or something.
There's a whole chapter about him in here.
Yeah. So before we introduce Mike, I want to go look, I'm looking on the couch. I am so thankful, appreciative, grateful for Carsey Young coming and sitting
in the house.
It'll teach you just to drop in the office, won't it?
Maybe so.
I looked up. There was Carsey walking down the hall.
Perfect timing.
I said, Carsey, yeah, come on, sit down with us. We've got Mike Batty on the podcast today. So that was an introduction for you, Mike. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Glad to be here.
You know, Mike, I'll say this. I told numerous people this week that we had you on the podcast, and they all said, well, good luck with that. And I'm just wondering, you know, what they're talking about when they said that?
I have no idea.
I can tell you, Mike is the mad scientist of turkey sounds. Truly.
Yeah.
Well, so I asked somebody, I said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, if you ask Mike what time it is, he's going to tell you how to build a watch. So do you have that reputation, Mike?
My whole life. Yes.
And we love you for That's it, awesome. Man.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to restrain myself from building watches.
All right, Mike. We're just picking at you a little bit.
Mac, I don't mind.
Mac, I'm looking at you. I think the subject matter, when we finally get to trumpets, you're going to really enjoy this. All right. So, look, guys, there's a couple things we're going to talk about. We're going to be real focused. We want to – Mike started off his career – hit me. We'll get him to tell about it, building calls for a bunch of – designing calls. He's a mad scientist, like Carsey said. But he also was one of the first, if not the first, to record wild turkeys and study their sounds. So – that's pretty ingenious.
I vividly remember this. This is the first turkey sounds I ever heard were the tapes that Mike produced early on.
Spitting feathers.
Yeah, literally had never heard a turkey before bought the tape and then started trying to sound like a turkey.
So, oh, there we go.
There it is.
Y'all listen. Oh, that's beautiful.
Truly.
Mike, tell us about that. Tell us about those recordings.
Well, my interest in recorded turkey started when I was competition calling back then. And the only live turkey sounds I could buy and get was from Dr. Leopold Williams, the Real Turkey Tapes. And that pretty much set me on fire. And I ended up calling Lovett 1988, and we hit it off like two peas in a pod, and we became good friends for over 25 years. And he had started recording turkeys in the 60s using a cassette player and a parabolic microphone and stuff like that. So by the time I rolled around in 1995, technology had already expounded to where you could buy a digital stereo portable recorder, professional style.
Like a DAT?
It was a DAT recorder, and then they evolved into hard drives. I recorded for like 20 years. So, yeah. I bought the equipment, and then I recorded shortly thereafter because I was working or guiding or hanging out at Oak Grove Plantation. And so I recorded Spit and Feathers and produced it, you know, in just a couple months. And it was the first digital stereo high definition audio ever recorded.
Oh, it's beautiful sounds. And when you listen to it, you can hear every different sound.
Oh, yeah, the old woods waking up.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
That had to be so much fun. Listen to her. So Mike mentioned to me when we were preparing
for this.
There's
a trumpet right there. There's a trumpet call right there.
Is that right?
Was it?
Yeah, that's a trumpet.
I just assumed that was a...
No, it is a hen, but that is what a trumpet will sound like. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You do exactly what she did. Yep. That's a trumpet call. Yeah.
That's what I sound like.
Go ahead.
In my mind when I'm
you do not sound like that. You might sound like that in your mind, but I can tell you.
Sound more like a rusty gate.
Yeah. It works. There. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't.
Oh me. So, Mike, would you kind of tell what you learned about how what turkeys, when we call, you were explaining how they hear some things a little differently than we think they do.
Well, yeah, they do. They, and I think not just turkeys, but other wildlife. I mean, what a turkey hears and relates to, what a turkey sees and relates to is different than us. And so by watching video and studying video when you are observing and the man-made influence or whatever, and audio, you get to, you build kind of a library in your head, you know, of the turkeys that you're trying to replicate when you're hunting. And in competition calling, you know, it's... you're trying to sound like a turkey. So the worst thing to do is practice your call to another turkey caller. You know, you should never try to imitate an imitator. Imitate the real thing. And I did that. I'm still passionate about it. And I believe the more you listen and the more you get that song in your head where you know every beat and measure and you know, the cadence and the rhythm and the feeling and the emotion when you're hearing that hen and you're watching that or you're listening to it or you're listening and watching, you know, you get that in your head and that becomes the turkey in your head. And funny thing about it is that, you know, I relate to a certain type of turkey yelp. You got Matt Van Sice as a turkey in his head, Mark Prudhomme, KT, go on down the list of callers over the years. And a lot of callers have what they relate to as turkey, which is fine. It was great, you know. But that's everybody's quest, I guess, is to find that turkey that they like and the turkeys like.
That's a good point because in my mind, it seems like over the years, hunters have become they've come to where they seem to sound more and more like the same hen.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does make sense. But I can I guess being around y'all so much and hunting, particularly with Bobby and Bill and other people, I can tell their yelp.
Yeah.
100%. So yeah. I don't think,
absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think everybody can even sound the same if they want to, because every mouth is different. Every blows things different and, you know, has a different mouth shape and everything else. So anyways.
No, that's a great point. I've listened to Dave Owens. I've watched his hunt so much. I guarantee if I was in the wood and I heard Dave Owens calling, I would say, that's not a turkey.
Yeah, that's Dave. Dave.
That's right.
Yeah. that's Dave right there.
Yeah. It's like funny. Guys, funny that you like can guys, hear it like that.
Yeah. Like the guys on the Hunting Public, that Aaron, when he does that owl scream. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if I heard that, I would say, hey, that's Aaron.
What are you doing in here?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, turkeys like it. That's all that matters.
So it's a lot more complicated than, I mean, you've drilled into the acoustics of the call and what all it, you're trying to replicate that real hen. And through the year, what have you learned that could help our listeners be better turkey callers?
Well, I'm not the first one to say it, but, you know, a lot of times guys that that are really good callers, they have that turkey in their head and they become that turkey. Mm. They see a hen and her mouth moving and they're doing it right with her in their head. And that's why they sound so good. Is it necessary to kill a turkey? No. You don't have to be, you know, the best in the world to do that. But it's always good to try to be the best you can on a call.
That's true. But I think that the, you know, I don't know. I've got a friend who sounds like crap on a turkey call, but he kills turkeys every year.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got, I mean, it doesn't sound classic competition or even particularly like a hen, more like a hen with a sore throat or something. But he kills turkeys, but he's got the rhythm and he's a good woodsman.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to be said about sounding like a turkey and then versus acting like a turkey. You know, so like when you call, where you call, how you approach is just as important as how you sound, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you walk through the woods to get to where you're going to call. You know, where you particularly call from, you know, is to me just as much of a factor as how you sound.
And this has been said a million times, but, you know, turkeys sound different.
Yeah.
You go on a good hunt and you're surrounded by turkeys for a long time. You're going to hear all kinds of stuff that, you know, by human standards would be bad calling.
Oh, 100%. Even on public land, you're like, oh, that's somebody walking in here yelping. And what? It's a hen walk.
A hen shows up.
Yeah, it's like, God, dog. Yeah. She sounded bad, but I need to stay right here. You know,
like last week, I was around a bunch of turkeys for a while, and I kept hearing all these weird three-note yelps, and it wasn't Jake yelps. It was like it would start out quiet and get loud, and then it would start out loud and get quiet. What we would refer to as a putt, but it was a cluck instead. You know, you hear a lot of variation out there, and then you may go the next day, and a lot of them are chattering differently.
Right.
What can you add to that, Mike?
Well, I think the reason to listen to as much real turkeys as you possibly can, whether regular audio or video and audio, is you're listening to them as they're communicating with each other or just being themselves. It's no different than we as humans communicate with each other. All you guys have a different voice, but you all sound like a human.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really the cadence, the timing, and how you do that. It's like, it's 2024. And today, computers still cannot replicate the human voice. You hear a computer generated human voice, and you know, it's a computer. It is talking like this. You know, it's that, you know, it has no life to it. It has no personality to it. And what you're trying to do in listening to all the audio is to get those nuances of how do you put the life into the call.
That's a beautiful and way of putting it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt about
so
it.
So all these turkeys out there think we sound like Siri?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it's crazy to think about what they can hear that we can't hear. I mean,
but turkeys are half stupid anyway. You correct. Know, they mate a plastic object that looks like a hen, you know, so, you know, don't give the turkeys so much credit that they're that smart.
No,
they're
doubt. Not. That's true. That's why you can relate to them so well, Bobby.
I'd say some of them are evil stupid.
Yeah. Evil stupid.
Yeah. They can be the stupidest in the world, and then they can be the smartest. I mean, they can peg you in a New York second. And if you're not on your toes, if you're not hunting like there's a turkey behind every tree staring at you, you're going to screw up.
That's true. That's a great way to put it. That's how you need to hunt, like there's one around every tree.
So, yeah, and he's got his eyeball on.
Right, no doubt.
Right, yeah.
Mike, can you give us just a little background about you and how you got into all this? And just before we get down into the trumpet, just a little background.
Well, the basic story is that I started calling in competition. I wanted to make a slate call because I couldn't cluck and purr on a diaphragm, and I had to do it on a friction call. So I actually made my first call to win the North Carolina contest. And then at the same time, I was using mouth calls, and the latex seemed to, the longer you kept it in your mouth, the more it got looser and it didn't sound as good, you know, once the latex got soaked. In fact, latex will absorb 200% of its weight in moisture. So that's like tuning the guitar, you know, the heavier it gets, the more water sogged, it'll lose that crispness that you like at first. So along with doing the first graphite slate call, I worked with Hygienic Corporation to develop specialized latex just for diaphragms, tubes, and game calls. And I got a hold of the R&D engineer at Hygienic, and I'm an R&D guy. He was an R&D guy, and we got to talking. I said, well, here's what I want. I want it to do this, but I don't want it to do that. I don't want it to do that, but I want it to do this. And I went through a litany of what I was looking for. And he was very intrigued because he was a latex master engineer. And in geek terms, he got really into it and started changing the molecular structure and all this stuff y'all don't care about. But anyway, so he would send me strips of latex about 4 inches wide and about 10 inches long. And I would send it to Paul Butsky, and I'd have Paul make me some, I was running Cutter back then, and he'd make me some calls, and then I'd play it. And then he'd send me another formula and send it to Paul, and Paul would send me the mouth calls. And then I don't know how the world I came up with RX1. I think RX is like a drug term. I have no idea. I don't remember. I'm brain dead. But anyway, so I ended up, when I finally got to what I wanted, I called it RX1. And so it's about, I think, 100 pounds of latex in a liquid form. And so when we ran the first run, what we did is we started out at 6 thousandths, dropped it down to 5 thousandths. And then from 5 thousandths, we went 4.5, 4, 4.75, 3.5, 3, all the way down to 2.5. And we ran the whole thing at once. And that was actually that was part of what put Preston Pittman on the map, because he made the black diamond mouth call.
I was going to ask that. The green latex.
That's what I was thinking. Green. I remember that. Oh. It's groundbreaking.
Well, that was a marketing thing on my end, because, you know, latex is actually dental dam, came in a natural color, which is white, and then gray or gray black color. So when I had them make it, I said, I'll put green dye in. I want it to be green because I wanted anybody who saw a mouth call on the shelf that it's a different color than they'd ever seen before.
Yeah.
This is 1988, boys.
No, I remember this.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
And so the RX-1 latex and then the graphite call. Now, here's what changed everything. Very simple. I made the call, the slate call, and I had a good friend of mine who was a rep for Haydell's Game Calls. Well, they got me in touch with Rod and Eli Haydell, and they flew me out to Bossier City, Louisiana, and they wanted to sell my slate call under Haydell's because they didn't have turkey calls in their line. And so just by happenstance, you know, here I made a call. I called my company Hunter Game Calls back then. And so they bought 1,000 pots from me. Okay. And I marked it up with a royalty. And I went, hey, this is the easiest way to make money. Just sell parts.
Yeah.
You know? And believe it or not, it just one thing led to another. I did the first one. And then I did the 3-inch mini slate for ML Inch, the Pro Mini Slate. Then I made one for Paul Buskey. And then it was self-perpetuating because the game call companies back then didn't have a friction call or they didn't have their own. And I was like the only game in town. So everybody was in the game call business along somewhere. You know, they were hiring me to design them a call. And by 1994, I got the call from Jimmy Primos to do the Batty World Class Slate, which y'all would know now as the Power Crystal, right?
Oh, yeah.
My favorite call.
And, right. And that was in 1994. And when I got that contract, I quit my day job. In fact, here's what happened. I went to my day job. Guys working at a sports authority in Charlotte. And I was working a full-time in the retail store and running the game call business at the same time. And so I went to my boss. I got the order from Jimmy Primos. And I went in there and I asked my boss, I said, look, I'm going to need 3 weeks off because I've got to design a call for Primos. And he was just a young manager guy. He was not too bright. But anyway, so he said, well, Mike, you're going to have to make up your mind. Do you want to work for Primos? Do you want to work here? And I said, well,
that's
let me think
about it. Pretty
easy
choice.
Yeah.
Well, listen to the numbers. I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to make $10,000 in 3 weeks, and you're only going to pay me $10,000 in 6 months. I think I'm going to work for Primos. And I walked out of his office and clocked out and haven't had a day job since.
There you go. That's the way to do it.
Good for you.
Congratulations.
Yeah. How about that? Yeah. Yeah. And you want to be my latex salesman. What
the
show,
green latex.
What show did that come from?
I have no earthly idea.
Carsey.
Don't know.
Mac.
Let me just guess. Know. Office Space.
I was going to say WKRP, but I don't know. You
Seinfeld.
That's the third show you watch. I should have remembered that.
So. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Mike, that's really interesting stuff, though. But it's
innovation. And when you were talking about the mills, were you making the latex thinner?
Well, hygienic actually is the only, probably still is still the only sheet latex company in the United States. They've got some in Malaysia and somewhere else in Japan or China now, whatever. But I worked with a director of R&D at Hygienic. And I worked with him, got the samples, approved what I wanted. And then I took that to the front office. See, I actually went around the whole management at Hygienic. And so I went all the way at R&D department. I called the main office, said, look, I'm in the game call business. I know you're selling latex to everybody else and you can't get anywhere else. I said, but I don't want somebody to just be able to buy my latex. I want an exclusive on RX-1. And they said, well, as long as you buy a whole run, 100 pounds of it, and that's a lot of latex.
Yeah.
yeah. then we won't tell anybody we make it or you make it or anything like that. That's how that works. So gotcha. It actually was, it actually by their R&D engineer, it was a scientific way of altering latex to my specs. Yeah.
And it was just you're changing the composition of the latex, not making it thinner or stretching it or stuff like that.
It had a different stretch factor. It repelled water 3 times more than regular latex, so it stayed more in tune in your mm-hmm. mouth longer. Mm-hmm. You could make it thinner, which you couldn't get sub-3,000ths latex before RX-1 mm-hmm. and 3.25 or something like that. And, you know, they just didn't make it as thin. But because it was a more kind of dense material in a way, you were able to run it thinner mm-hmm. and that produced the sound that the classic one was like the Black Diamond,
which the Black Diamond.
Yep. The Black Diamond, the Preston on the map. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Popular. Very popular. Around here.
Yeah, it was.
See these people? When the clock strikes 5, it's not the end. It's just the beginning. They have to do these things. They have to do those things. Enter the all-new LS Tractor MT2 and MT2E, a relentless force of innovation. Redesigned with a new hood and cab built for comfort and visibility, with enhanced lifting capacity to get the job done. Making these people the ones everyone else calls those people. Visit your local LS Tractor dealer today.
Moultrie has pioneered the game management category. Today, Moultrie is one of the best-selling brands of feeders and seeders in the world, and they continue to innovate with new technology that gamekeepers will rely on. Moultrie products are always field-tested and designed for hunters by hunters, combining forward-thinking innovation with time-tested practicality. Moultrie, first in feeders since 1979. All right, so guys, Moultrie is offering our listeners a 15% site-wide discount at MoultrieFeeders.com. Use code MossyOak with a capital M, MossyOak, at MoultrieFeeders.com and get that 15% discount. So, Mike, I wanted to ask you, when we were preparing for this, you were telling me how important it was to sound to in your arsenal to be able to sound like a Jake. Could you speak to that just a little bit?
Yeah. It's funny because one of my favorite books is by Tom Turpin. And in the book, he talks about going on a turkey hunt. And make a long story short, he met an older fella, and they hooked up and decided whatever they killed, they would split, you know. So anyway, they busted this group of young turkeys and set up on them. And this Jake came in and got hung up in a thicket about 60 yards away. And Tom Turpin at that time was not in the game call business. He was a regular hunter, and his caller of choice, his only turkey call, was a scratch fox. So Tom Turpin is sitting communicating to this Jake hung up in the thicket, going back and forth, but the Jake wouldn't move. And the old man whispered to him, and he says, even though you're doing that old hen perfectly, that is not what that young gobbler wants to hear. And so the next time the Jake yelped, the old man had a Jordan trumpet call, and he mimicked the Jake. And as soon as he mimicked the Jake broke, ran in, and Tom Turpin had to shoot him in self-defense.
Wow.
And Tom Turpin said right there in his book, he said, right then and there, I knew the turkey had a language. Mm-hmm. Moral of the story, sound like an old hen to a Jake ain't going to work. Because the Jake actually knows his mother's voice, even though it was imitated well on the scratch box. The other moral to the story is, in the hierarchy and pecking order of the wild turkey, the Jake is just as important a vocal sound as your hen and gobbler. Hmm. So you always want to make Jake sounds if you're trying to replicate you're a Jake with hens. See, a lot of times when you're hand calling and he's not moving, and then you go, You know, you're going rock, 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 rock. You know, and then, you know, he's gobbling, but he ain't moving. You know, the name of the game is to move his feet, not his beak. Okay. Yes. You're not hunting gobbles. You're hunting gobblers. Okay. So when he ain't moving his feet, what do you want to do? Well, the next thing you can do to move his feet is that you mix your hen sounds with Jake calking and Jake sounds. And what that represents to the gobbler who can't see you, he thinks that there's another gobbler with those hens and Jakes. And that's what makes him break and comes walking to you, is that Jake sound. Mm.
So it's kind of about the picture you're painting for that.
Yeah, right? 100%. Yeah.
And that helps. That's just another layer.
Yeah, let me make this clear again. A lot of times you are calling directly to a turkey. I mean, that's a gobbler, and you're talking to him too. Mr. Tom, here's what I'm going to say. Then there's times that you're doing calling to paint a picture of turkeys, and don't have anything to do with that turkey over there gobbling. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? And he kind of feels left out in a way. So you create a scenario with your calling, and if hunting's all strategy. So you plan your work, and you work your plan. And so when you're calling, then if you're doing one thing and you switch it up, you have to have that. Okay, now what am I going to try to do with this call? Okay, mm-hmm. What kind of thing am I going to do? Am I going to throw in this? Am I going to throw in that? You know, and you're not going to hurt anything. You know, I mean, turkeys talk to each other, and it's, you know, I'm of the age of the young guns, me and Preston Pittman and Eddie Salter. I'm going down the list, and we were the guys that we did everything wrong at the beginning. I mean, we're still responsible for calling too much, calling too loud, running and gunning, messing things up. You know, we were just hunting turkeys with our tails on fire, you know, but.
When you think about the different vocalizations, the cluck, and now people kind of refer to it as a bubble cluck, and the kiki, the yelp, purring, can you kind of, in your mind's eye, your opinion, what are they saying when they make some of those vocalizations?
Oh, and that's a real good question. Sometimes I don't have a clue. I don't know definitively to put my mouth on it. I've just got a second nature feeling after listening to them talking, communicating either on their own or amongst themselves. I don't know. I just have a, it just comes from, does it feel right? You know,
are you saying that it depended on the day and where you are and what's going on, that her clucking may be a sound of contentment?
You can make turkey calling as complicated as you want to. Okay, which is human nature. You're going to do it. I'm going to do it. Everybody's going to probably do it. But what it all boils down to is everything works off yelps and clucks, you know. And if you can yelp to a turkey and cluck and with the same, you know, rhythm and cadence and everything, identifying yourself with the turkey is 80% of the job, basically. You know, the rest of it is. It changes every day. Sometimes we'll get into the ghost gobbler cotton plantation, but you know, sometimes, you know, all you need to do is just say, here I am. And that's all you need to do. And if you have to know that ahead of time, when you're doing your plan and when you're deciding what you're going to call and what you're going to do after it, that's something you have to put a little thought into and then carry it through. Am I going to do this one call? And am I going to wait 30 minutes? Am I going to do this one call? Am I going to wait 10 minutes? Am I going to do this? Am I going to wait an hour? That's a mental decision on each turkey hunter, depending on what day it is. I mean, one day, you know, sitting there for an hour and a half works. You know, sometimes it doesn't. And it's all a gamble. It's the best chess game in the world.
Lanny, I have a hard time saying, okay, I'm not going to call for 15 minutes. It sounds good in the beginning, and then 15 minutes drags by.
Seems so long when you're out there.
Yeah. It does. Especially when it's a little windy and you can't hear anything coming. That's tough.
So, Mike,
wait a minute. Bobby, if you're saying if you feel the need to call in 15 minutes, why is that? That's human nature. What I'm trying. Oh, wait a minute, Bobby. That's you. That's not the turkey. See, turkey time. You better get this in your head quick, boys. Turkey time is not our time. It's turkey time. And there's nothing more common than a gobbler taking 30 to 45 minutes to come to only come 20, 30 yards. And if you don't have that ahead of time, you're probably messing up and bumping some turkeys.
We're well trained with that around here. This thing we call toxie time.
Yeah. So I've got this thing in my head that let me turn this off real quick.
You getting somebody in your DMs?
Somebody sliding
your DMs.
That sounds obscene.
Must be about turkeys. They were looking at the phone.
The game warden, too.
You better answer that one.
Okay, so look, I've got this thing in my head, and I'm being honest. I can't yelp one time. I've got to yelp twice.
Dave Owens does a single note yelp. No.
I'm talking about, so like, I'll yelp, and if it fully expecting one to gobble. And
of
when he doesn't gobble, then I pause and I yelp again. Because I'm thinking in my mind, I've convinced myself that maybe he's scratching in the laser.
Right,
he's
doing,
and he's like, What was that? And then he hears it the second time and then he's like, he'll gobble at it.
Oh yeah. I agree with you.
So if I just always call twice. Yeah. I'm very disappointed when I yelp and one doesn't gobble.
You are. And you're really even more disappointed when you yelp and one doesn't gobble and I yelp and it does.
Let's go back to the truck.
you leave.
I'm sorry, Mike. Well, I didn't mean to disrupt.
Okay. Well, there's one other thing I want to say that is, I think it's really important. A turkey's hearing is just not phenomenal, but to know the exact point of origin of that sound is ridiculous.
I was going to ask that, Mike, when you started your statement, I'm like, God, they could pinpoint.
A turkey's home range, he seems to know every inch of that home range, exactly like it's a checkerboard, okay? And he knows when that sound comes, you can put a chess piece on that tree, right? And Ben Lee said this a long time ago. He said, if you clucked one time in the woods and a gobbler was 200 yards away, and that gobbler could throw a baseball, he would hit you between the eyes. I mean, and I saw a hunt on the Hunting Public where they set up on this turkey, and for some reason or another, the light wasn't right, and they looked to their left, and they moved about 30 yards to their left, you know, because they were in the sun. And when the turkey came up, he was going right to that tree that they moved 30 yards away. I mean, when that gobbler pegged them on their call the first time, he went right to that tree. And so if you understand your opponent and their basically turkey mentality, then it becomes easier to hunt because you hunt with purpose. It doesn't matter whether it's successful or not, because that happens over time. Nothing's going to beat burning your own shoe leather chasing turkeys. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me. And we often talk about that, Mike, is like how they can just know exactly where you are. No matter how, I mean, everybody's probably yelped real loud before and a turkey's gobbled way off and you sit down. And then the next time if you're having a good day, next time you yelp, he's way close. And then all of a sudden he shows up and he's, you know, right in front of you.
And they remind us of that time and time again.
Yeah. I was shocked for you to say that. I always just thought they could hear that good. But it makes more sense what you're saying, that just like if you were in your living room and something was out of place and you heard something in, you know exactly where to look for it.
Lenny, I had to tell you, hunting with you, you've got your phone in your pocket. You're constantly checking on X.
Yep. Very valuable key features all in those things. It really is. From the compass mode to recent imagery, I mean, it really helps you understand where you are spatially, where you're headed, where a turkey is, where he was. It's a heck of a tool to use in the spring woods.
I didn't realize that they're updating these maps every couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'd have never known about that clear cut that you were hunting if I didn't have that recent imagery.
Well, you know, and you could share some waypoints with me.
I could share some points with you. with you. You're exactly right.
I mean, it has that capability.
It does have that sharing capability, which is great. You know, you're wanting to show me where your goblin turkeys are.
Oh, man. You know, Onyx, it's a great app.
It's a great app.
So guys can go to onyxmaps.com/hunt and use code Mossy Oak to get 20% off.
There you go.
I'm a big fan of Onyx.
I am too.
They are a master of their environment. Mm-hmm. They are a master of it. Mm-hmm. And I call it the red zone. Okay. You get within, turkey gets within 50 yards of you. That turkey is wired from the day it's born to, because things want to pounce up and mm-hmm. get it. And, you know, bobcats move real quick and everything. So they're on a hair trigger. I mean, they can split in a tenth of a second. And when turkey gets in the red zone inside 50 yards, he's dangerous. He gets inside 40 yards, it's wicked dangerous. And the rest is history. Y'all all know the rest of that. So, but on the other hand, it's just the game that it's, I call it the dance. You know, I like going turkey hunting because let's dance, boys. You know, go out that morning and say, it's time to dance. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. There's oftentimes that you come back and you feel great because you had a hunt.
Oh, yeah. So dynamic.
Nothing died, but you had a hunt.
Now, that's where you need to be with it. You really do. Because if you get frustrated every time you don't go out and get one, you're going to be frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's look at Mac. Let's look at Mac.
How's that, Mac?
Pretty frustrated, I would say. Mike,
but you've been having fun.
Oh, yeah. I've had some great hunts. Had a good hunt this morning. Yeah. I mean, got to watch them. Got to watch some procreation.
Ooh.
What
is it? That one chance.
Yep, securing a breeding opportunity. Yeah,
that one chance.
But no, I've got a question for you, Mike. So when you're setting up on a turkey and you hear him gobble, he's on the ground and he gobbles, you set up, say you're inside 200 yards. What's the first sound you're going to make?
Yelp to him. Just start off plain yelping, you know, because and then if that works, you know, then I don't change my game plan. I yelp and then he gobbles and I'm going to go, pop, 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 you know, just for the hell of it. You know why? I mean, it's like fishing. You know, I threw a lure out there. He bit it. I jerked the rod back, set the hook. What am I going to do? Throw another bait, throw a cackle in there. I'm going to take the hook out of his mouth and replace it with another bait. No, that's not going to work, you know. So once you hook him, then what did I say? The name of the game is move his feet, not his beak. Don't ever, ever, ever call just so he'll gobble so you'll know where he is. That is the worst thing. That's the worst bad habit. And you'll be frustrated for years to come if you don't get out of that habit.
And I'm looking at a bunch of turkey hunters who do that.
That's my main strategy.
I just want to hear him gobble. Where is he?
Yeah, the gobble of the wild turkey you make the calm man excited and the excited man worthless.
Oh, my goodness. That sounded a lot like us.
Pretty profound.
Yeah. I've got one.
Oh, man. I get to shaking so hard, I'd have to run a mouth call because I shake so I couldn't run a box or a slate. My hands were shaking so bad.
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt.
If you ain't been there, you ain't telling the truth. So
that's right. 100%.
What excited you and made you want to get into the trumpet game? What do you think is special about the trumpet?
Well, that's a simple answer is that Ray Suppin, the guy who introduced me to turkey hunting, he actually made me a 3-piece wing bone from a hen he killed in Virginia that fall and a scratch box. So when I first started hunting, my teacher, you know, made me a wing bone and a scratch box. I didn't know crap from Shinola, you know, and I didn't have any reason not to believe him that they weren't the greatest turkey calls in the world, you know. So, you know, when I first started hunting, I was using a 3-piece wing bone in a scratch box and killing turkeys. In fact, I sent you a picture of me with my first long beard, and I called that one up with a scratch box. I sent a picture of it. If you want to put it up. That's the first turkey, first long beard I ever killed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saw that.
That was before Mossy Oak. You know, that was old army camo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that this is a great point for us to kind of turn to. We wanted Mike to explain the trumpet and the wing bone, but Mike, that we're just hearing a lot of people are curious about them. They seem to be really catching on. But just tell us what we need to know about these two.
Well, I think one of the differences with me is that I do believe I have a God-given talent to play these turkey call musical instruments, and I have a musical ear. So I think I was kind of built to get interested and learn them and use them and get pretty good on them. And so it wasn't long that I bought my first Billy Bice custom trumpet. That was in 1984.
Wow.
For $25. And son, I hit the woods running. I mean, I had a Penwoods, and I still don't know what model it was, but I was killing turkeys with it too. And then I got the Billy Bice, and then over 20 something years, I probably owned probably some of the finest trumpet calls that ever been made. I don't know. I probably have owned 150 or more different trumpets. So you have to go back 40 years ago, because there weren't, besides Penwoods that was selling, besides Penwoods, you know, you couldn't buy a trumpet anywhere. And so, you know, the mass market didn't have people selling them, so people didn't have access to them. The people who were running suction calls, they were getting Jordan or wing three-piece wing bones. I mean, they were still around, the wing bones. It's just the trumpet hadn't taken hold yet. So I think the main question I get, what's the difference between a wing bone and a trumpet? And the difference between a wing bone and a trumpet is a trumpet is truly, and especially in my case with the Omega I came out with this year, it is a musical instrument. It's on a bioacoustical turkey sound in the call. It's not do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, which is like a musical instrument. It is tuned to have the voice of the turkey in it. And even when you're playing it wrong, you're doing it right. Does that make sense? To the turkey you're calling to. So I hope I explained that right.
It's a little confusing, but we get it.
That's fascinating.
The wing bone, though, has been around for, correct me if I'm wrong.
It's got to be the first.
I mean, 6,500 BC.
Yeah, it's obviously.
That or a blade of grass.
Yeah.
Actually, the first turkey call advertised was in the 1880s, and it was a single wing bone, a single bone. It was in catalog, yeah. A marketed turkey call was a single bone. And then there's some old pictures floating around of a guy with a muzzleloader and a black guy sitting behind a big log, and the black guy is actually calling the turkeys in with a single bone, and he's putting a bone between his thumb and his forefinger, cupping his hand, and he's sucking on a single bone just like a drinking straw. Hmm. Yeah. Been around forever.
It's amazing somebody figured out how to do that with a
well. It's funny to me how like is into turkey hunting as we've always been. Like just now, the trumpet call is coming back around. I mean, I've always been familiar with wing bones and had them, but it's like just interesting how it's really the OG thing, and it's for me, it's the most underutilized one that I use.
It's called the internet, boys.
Yeah.
What it is, the internet. That if it wasn't for the internet, is the explosion of the trumpet call is because it's all over the internet now. You've got Dave Owens, you've got the boys at Hunting Public. They're all doing content. All the forums are there out there. People are communicating, going back and forth, and it's taken off like wildfire. And that's what got me into. You know, I made a trumpet 20 years ago, the Alpha, but I sold out of them. And then they went to the secondary market, and they were bringing $500 up for one of my old ones. So I couldn't make the old one. So I said, I'm just going to throw my hat back in the ring, and I'm going to knock this little puppy out of the ballpark with a daggone trumpet call. So I spent all of 2023 developing the Omega trumpet. And the main reason is, and I don't think you guys understand, like he's got that book in front of me, I am the guy who makes calls for the public. Okay, I'm not a custom call maker. You don't call me up and say, I want you to make me this call that you fashioned by hand. You know, I make a call to sell to the public. And that's basically what sets me apart, is because my goal is not to make really the best turkey call in the world. My goal is to make the best call that anybody can learn how to play and kill turkeys. And that's what Mike Batty does.
That makes sense.
And I'm assuming a consistency comes with that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're making a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So Mike, walk us through, if I've got a trumpet in my hand, what are the steps to making a sound? Lanny's got a straw over here, and from time to time, he sounds pretty good on it.
Yeah. It's, you know, believe it or not, it's it works 1,000 times quicker if you have somebody right in front of you who can play one and you can watch them and kind of go back. I mean, when we go to shows, I mean, me and Robbie, my son-in-law, he is president of Wild Talker Game Calls, and you know, it takes us under 5 minutes. We can take a 10-year-old kid to full-grown adults, never had one in their mouth to play in. You know, if we're there to help them, we can get them up and running, you know, real quick. And it's not as hard as people think it is. I think the reason that we do not have trumpets popular is because none of the major game call manufacturers offered them to the public, because Wilbur Primos doesn't hunt with a trumpet. Night and Hale didn't hunt with a trumpet. Ben Lee didn't hunt. What, could you imagine if Ben Lee hunted with a trumpet call? They would still happen today, wouldn't we?
The Furminator is the industry's most versatile piece of food plot equipment, allowing plotters to do every step of the process, working the soil, adding seed and soil supplements, and compacting. From start to finish, with a single implement, it's hassle-free by design. Set it for the seed size and simply drive the tractor, and the Furminator does the rest. Check it out at theferminator.com.
Hey guys, Dudley from Gamekeepers here. I want to tell you about the all-new Gunner Dog Bowl. It's designed for home and built for travel. It's customizable, leak-resistant, light on weight, solid on durability, and rust-proof. Like other Gunner products, they're made in Nashville and designed for everywhere.
Nosler is known for their bullets, and now they're making suppressors. Nosler suppressors are made for hunting. Adding a Nosler suppressor to your rifle will make you a quieter, more accurate, and more effective hunter. Protect your hearing and disturb less game with a Nosler suppressor. The time to hunt quiet is now. Learn more at Nosler.com.
But explain to us how you do it. So you put this thing to your lips at the same spot, and is it a strong suction?
So, I would say.
Are you? You're not, like with a mouth call, you're not saying something with this suction. Are you saying something?
You're pulling air through the bottom of the trumpet to get your lips to vibrate, and you're controlling the airflow with your lips, and you're controlling the tone and pitch by how you. If you had a call in front of you, I could, or whatever. We need to do that sometime and have a. But that's what he's doing is basically that. That's all you do. You put it up to your mouth and you suck on the tip of it. Yeah. You're pulling air in.
So do you have a call handy you can make a few sounds for us?
This is literally a straw from the restaurant.
No, I don't know what I'm done here this morning. But anyway.
Oh, Max got one.
Yeah, Mac went and found one.
There it is.
Hey, so Mike, what's the Dudley?
Do you think the trumpet sounds... I guess the best way, when we talk about a call that sounds good, we talk about how woodsy it sounds. Do you think you sound more woodsy or better with a trumpet versus a diaphragm versus a pot call versus a
mouth
call?
Gotcha. I think all the calls are valid, and I've used every type of call. I still use things like sometimes I'll take a wild hair and I'll take a push button with me just for the hell of it.
Oh yeah. You know, so, shout out to Bill Sugg.
But if you want to know the real beauty and magic in the suction calls is that It's like no other call. It's not wood on wood. It's not slate. It's not latex on your inside your mouth or a tube call. It what's making a sound is the vibration of your lips, your God-given lips that God gave you. It's natural, fleshy material that has its own characteristics that is creating the vibrations and the sound magnified through the trumpet. So it is next to using your natural voice.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, now that does make sense to me.
So when you're using a trumpet, and this has already been scientifically plotted out, Lovett Williams and myself have already done this, of all the turkey calls out there, take every one of them, box, slate, mouth call, tube call, blah, 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 put it on the screen as far as the voice print, right? The trumpet and the wing bone are closer to the turkey's voice on the computer, what the computer is reading. It's more complex than the other calls.
Well, there you have it.
So that would be like, we need to try to fool the Merlin bird app.
Yeah, with the trumpet.
So Mac, who's in here with us, you can't see him, has a trumpet in front of him. Mac, would you please reproduce the sounds of a spring morning when a hen's yelping softly?
No pressure. So I'm going to preface this with I am not very good.
So here we go.
It's got a hollow sound to it.
It definitely has a little bit different tone. It does sound more natural, not as sharp.
Well, like you're a judge. Well, what do you think about that?
He's got the fundamentals down, especially on his clucks and cuts. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he's got that nailed. In order to improve his yelping, he needs to not try so hard. And let the trumpet and speed up the cadence a little bit and let that two note go yelp, 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 yelp.
It's,
you know,
it's tough. I mean, I've had a cane collar I fashioned after from the McElhenney book, and I've got a hen wing bone that I've lost, but the cutting and the clucking to me is a lot easier than reproducing a yelp.
Let's work on a fly down cackle next, Mike.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
But, you know, and all fun and everything, everything he was doing just then will kill turkeys, you know, and that's the part that you guys will be amazed if you will just discipline yourself to say, okay, this morning I'm going to dedicate at least the first hour of just running a trumpet and just see what the hell happens, you know?
Yeah.
And then hopefully if you kill a bird, you're going, oh, shit, this works. I like this.
That's,
I mean, Rob Kenny killed one with one.
That's what turkey hunting's all about is get out there and have fun and try new things and improve your experience.
Well, I can see where if you're hunting in places with a lot of pressured birds and they're used to hearing box calls or whatever, sounding different would sound good. Very appealing.
Say, Bobby, remember we were talking about, you were talking about, you know, if you hadn't heard anything in 15 minutes, you get a little antsy and want to call. But listen to this. This will help everybody because this is what I did to improve myself. Expand your horizons. In other words, plan your working plan. Go out. If you're going out tomorrow morning, say, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to make 3 or 4 calls and I'm going to wait 45 minutes. Even though it's going to kill me, I'm going to do it anyway because I'm expanding my horizon. Right. I want to add something to my playbook and see if it works. If people take an attitude on learning to put more game plans in their playbook, they will always end up being better hunters because it all works out in the long run. The more shoe leather you burn, the more things you try and fail, it's how you grow. When you get stuck in doing one thing, you're stuck. If you go out one morning, the turkey does everything to script. Tree yelp, fly down cackle, yelp, cut, cackle, comes up, strutting, gobbling, boom. If you try to reproduce that for the next 3 days in a row, you're in for bad luck, most likely, right?
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah.
That's really good sage advice.
Stimulate your mind, Bob. Yeah.
Carsey, what do you say to all that?
I say that's a great idea, and I'm going to try it.
There you go.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna sit there for 45 minutes. I'm gonna go on.
I'm probably gonna have to take some mittens, but keep my hands off my call. But.
So, Mike, can you describe? I mean, like, can somebody just cut a few joints of cane and glue it together? Do you prefer the trumpet style? I mean, it's just it looks very much refined. Like, you know, it's an improved.
Well, it is. It's a wonderful thing that you can take a turkey that you killed and take the bones out of it and fashion that in a way to fool another one of its kind. That is wonderful nature, God, and everything. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about the difference between folk art, making stuff that works every day, to an art and a science to make something better. Mm-hmm. Can you yelp softer on mine versus a 3-piece wing bone? Yes. Can you cut better on mine? Yes. Can you get more inflection on mine? Yes, because it was designed as a musical instrument maker to do that. Do you need it? Have to have it? No. Should you have it? Absolutely.
Yeah. Where can I get one of these Omegas? I mean, I'm looking right now trying to find it. I mean, can you buy? Yeah. I mean, Carson and I are both trying to order one over here.
Email it. It's called Smoke and Strut. It's SMOKENSTRUT, Smoke and Strut at iCloud.com.
Here comes an email.
And then
got one, Carsey.
then my partner in crime, my son-in-law, he takes the orders and ships them out, and they give you confirmation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But back to why is a trumpet call desirable to have, not that their wing bones and other stuff don't work, but they really are built to do that. Now, I've been doing this for 40 years, hunting turkeys with sucking calls, trumpets, wing bones, and everything else. And I collected over 150 or 200 of them. So when I designed this, I actually took the best qualities of a Jordan, that's a 3-piece cane call, and a wing bone call, and a trumpet. I took all disciplines of making a trumpet call, and I combine the best features. The Omega is the only trumpet call out there that has a man-made wing bone as the mouthpiece. Hmm. It comes up, and then it goes to a flat. And if you look at it, there's a slot in there, just like a wing bone. So there's more lip contact because there's a slot and not just a single round hole at the top. So that makes it easier to play, too. Also, it creates more vibration. So even though you'll take a custom call that doesn't have mine with a standard mouthpiece, mine will always sound different because it's got a wing bone mouthpiece in it. Does that make sense? And for the public, for John Q public, 95% of all the people, only very few people really like to have a round piece versus a wing bone piece.
Hmm. Well, good to know.
Well, I tell you, I hear a lot of people say that it's just such a different, clearer, purer sound that it's got a place in your bag of tricks.
Yeah. I always, you know, want to sound more turkey and like a different turkey. You know, one of my goals is to sound like multiple turkeys. Yeah. You know, I don't want to sound like one. I want to sound like several of them.
Yeah.
So
I don't know how many times I've heard people say, I went hunting with my buddy and I backed up, and he backed up for me about 30 or 40 yards and started playing his trumpet call. And he said, that was all turkey. Mm-hmm. He said, I couldn't believe it. He said, I couldn't believe it when I was sitting there. Is that him on that trumpet? And it's all, you get 30, 40 yards away in the woods and that trumpet, it is all turkey, son. If you practice and are disciplined enough to learn it. Yes. Does it? Would it take more effort to so-called get comfortable where you can call on to man? Yeah, it might, but the benefits are worth it, in my opinion.
I got to have one.
Yeah, I do too. So look, what should we be asking him? I'm kind of drawing a blank here. Oh, Carson, don't fall asleep.
I'm not falling asleep. I'm listening.
No, I'm soaking.
We're typing up an order.
Yeah.
So
okay. But, hey, I'll tell you something to be interesting. Put the picture up there of the Ghost Gobbler Cowden plant.
Yeah, tell that story, yeah, would you please?
Put the picture up there of the White Gobbler. I'll tell you the story
Richie,
about
wake
that.
Wake up, Richie.
Richie, is come he on, asleep Rich. Over there? Oh, there he is.
Yeah, all right, tell the story.
There it is. All right, that's the Ghost Gobbler Cowden plantation. If you see, you probably can't see it that well, but he had four beards, 1¼-inch spurs.
Lord,
and,
he made it that long and, being white.
Yeah, and that's a solid ivory trumpet. And I called up that turkey with a solid ivory trumpet, and here's how I killed him. The guy that I went hunting with, he was there 2 days before I got there. I got there tonight. He'd already spent 2 days, and he was calling to this bird. He could never call him in. Well, Cowden Plantation is 10,000 acres, and I really wasn't hunting the White Gobbler. He just happened, like at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, he let me out and was going to come back at lunch. Well, he let me out, and I made a long walk calling, trying to strike a turkey, and I didn't. I probably walked 300 yards and turned around and was coming back. Well, walking that road, that long road, there was a road would cut off to the right about 150, 175 yards into a 1-acre food plot. It had deer hunting stands all over it. And so on the way coming back, I would walk down that road. There was about 6 of those deer stands, and I'd go peek in the field to see if I could see a turkey in those food plots. Well, I came to this, just walked down that road to the food plot, and I peeked into the field, and I see this thing in the field, and my eyes are going, what are you looking at? You know?
I bet so.
And it was that damn white turkey strutting in that food plot. And he hadn't seen me, and I was just watching him. I'm going, well, what am I going to do? My buddy's already thrown the kitchen sink at him for the past 2 days. What am I going to do? I'm a patient hunter. I don't make any decision until I know exactly what my game plan is. So I'm sitting there thinking, what am I going to do? There he is. What am I going to do? Well, he got to the middle of the field, and he came out of strut and started walking directly out of the field. Okay. And when he started walking out of the field, I said, well, you know what? He's checking those food plots. And so I waited till he got all the way out of that field, into the woods, and I backed up my whole butt all the way down to the next food plot, ran down the road, ran around the left-hand corner because he was coming from my left, and I set up and out of breath, had to catch my breath for one thing because I was pretty excited about it. And so I had my trumpet. And so what I did is I took my trumpet and I pointed it into the middle of the food plot with both hands. And all I did was cluck one time. Fuck. All I did, cluck. And he got about 10 yards before he came into the field, and he gobbled. And I just held my ground. And finally he came into the field, and it took him about 10 minutes strutting and looking and strutting and looking for him. I had pinpoint 40 yards in the field. You know, I had a twig pegged. When he steps on that twig, I'll pull the trigger, and that's what I did. I just clucked to him one time and killed him.
Wow.
The old one think. Cluck one.
Yeah, that's it.
Did you Mr. know?
Bad Bullet Bent Creek.
Yeah. Go call it.
Did you know this turkey was.
Call much has happened.
You know, had they said something to you about the white turkey?
Yeah. I mean, well, Frank, my buddy that was, you know, that I went hunting with, he had told me, you know, he had seen him, he had called to him, you know. He spent about 3 hours and 2 days trying to call him and couldn't do it. So, yeah, I mean, I knew about the turkey. I didn't know that he put me in the same area. We weren't hunting the white turkey on purpose, okay? I wasn't. But Kenny Jarrett, when you go to hunt at Cowden Plantation, they would say, we have a white gobbler. If you shoot it, you have to mount it because they had seen that turkey as a poult. In fact, from point A to point, Cowden Plantation is 10,000 acres. So from point A to point B, that white gobbler had been seen 4 miles from point A to point B, and it butted up to the bomb plant. Okay. Mm. So he was living partly on the bomb plant and on Cowden Plantation.
Wow. You know what? Now you say Kenny, Jarrett, that all rings bells because we've been over there years ago and did a television show about him making rifles. Making so it's rifles. Really
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Kenny Jarrett, Cowden Plantation.
Yeah. Wow. So, that's an incredible turkey and with the ivory trumpet and
four beards, inch and a quarter. Come on.
Yeah.
Full.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, he was
fantastic. That's exactly right.
The only reason we know he was 4 and a half is because he was seen as a poult. You cannot tell by his furs. Okay. But we knew how old he was because, you know, because they had seen him and other men. People deer hunting saw him too and stuff like that. But yeah. I thought
it's amazing
it was
interesting. He rated them on being white.
Yeah, it really mm-hmm. is. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. And he wasn't albino. See, he had black eyes. He didn't have pink eyes.
Leucistic.
He was like 1% less than albino. His toenails were blonde, his furs were blonde, his everything else, his legs were kind of toenails and all that. But he had black eyes. So, but I will tell you, in pure honesty, you got to appreciate this. When I shot him, okay, now I had never seen anything like that. I had no idea about it. But when I shot him, when I ran to him, I was thinking, oh my God, I just hope this isn't Farmer Brown's.
Yeah. Oh, Butterball.
I flipped that booger over and I checked every inch of him. I said, no, it's a wild turkey. Okay. All right. I didn't just get embarrassed.
It's happened.
All right.
That's a great story. Yeah.
But there's another thing about calling. You know, one cluck is a cluck means where are you or here I am. Okay. Mm-hmm. And in your game plan and in your communicating with the turkey, when you cluck one time, that's what you're doing. You're saying either here I am or where are you? And so that is a lure. You don't need any more. You don't need to be able to watch the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So remember, when you're calling, you really are communicating something. You just need to believe in what you're communicating in, and that will up your experience in killing turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Have a little bit more confidence in yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Believe in yourself. Like, okay, I'm going to do this because I think that's going to work, and play it out.
Mm-hmm.
I believe.
Yeah. That's what I learned today. I need to believe in myself more.
Expand your horizons.
I'm a wet hot sportsman after wild game.
Yeah. Is that Dudley again?
Oh, man. Good job, Richie. Well, so that's a great story. Mac, why don't we ask Mike a trivia question?
All right.
Mike, you've got we always ask our guests a trivia question. Not always, but sometimes most times we ask our guests a trivia question. And one of our listeners who's left a review has already won a prize because we randomly pulled their name. Mike will tell us who it is. But Mike, you're playing for a t-shirt and you can cut the sleeves out of it and wear it the way you want to wear it.
There you go.
And guys,
I know, but what the review winner win?
Mac, what'd he win?
Dudley's Apex shells.
Yep. Nice.
Will those be the empty shells I missed?
No. No, the ones that you have not shot this
the
year.
The ones that I hadn't shot yet.
I like it.
We don't think you're going to need them.
Yeah. All right, good.
So Farley F is our winner this week.
And he's going to win a box of Apex shells?
Yeah, he'll just need to tell us what gauge he prefers.
That's killer.
Yeah.
And
y'all need to get Hayden to put a review in.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, if y'all leave a review, somebody's going to win a prize every week.
And there's not a whole lot of reviews, so that ups the odds.
It does up the odds. All right, so Farley F is who we're playing for, right?
Yes, that is correct. All right, Mike, so I was trying to find a good question for you, and I think I've got one.
Hang on, Mac. Did we play the Sheffield music?
No. Come on, Rich.
Today's trivia is brought to you by Sheffield Financial. Explore swift, effortless, and convenient financing for power sports, outdoor power equipment, and trailers, fueling your pursuits in hunting, fishing, and gamekeeping. More details at SheffieldFinancial.com.
So, I'm thinking Moles needs a trailer.
What?
Well, we need
a trailer. What happens to trailers around here?
To haul tractors, or LS tractors around. We need a trailer. thinking about going through Sheffield.
Are you gonna finance one for us?
And just
put you're it gonna out, have to after that wedding.
Put it here on the Carson, you don't need to be laughing at that. You don't even know what we're talking about over here.
Oh, yes, I do.
So yeah, but Sheffield. Hey guys, we're real proud of Sheffield. If y'all need to buy ATV or anything like that, check them out.
They're no good doubt folks. About it. Get you financed quick.
All right, Mac, back to you.
All right, Mike. So the question is definitely about turkeys. So when Europeans came to America and they came across the American turkey, what animal did they name the turkey after? It is not native to North America.
I don't know, an ostrich because they're so big. I have no idea.
So it's an African guinea fowl, and they're found in Turkey.
I remember reading that, yeah.
Oh, they're found in Turkey. Look at there, man.
Wait a minute now.
He is just, and Mac has enlightened us.
So the pilgrims, basically.
Right. Yes, if you want to characterize them as that. Early Europeans.
Yeah. I'm not trying to characterize them. But I'm thinking about those guys.
They were sitting around eating Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah.
And they named the wild turkey. Turkey.
I did a lot of research on turkeys, and yeah, that is exactly right. They attribute it to a guinea fowl. That is correct. And they in the old 1800s drawings and everything, they called it a turkey fowl. That's what they called it.
Huh.
So that is, you're absolutely correct. I remember now.
And guineas are from Turkey. The country turkey.
Yes. They're found there. So we'll make you a deal, Mike. I'll send you a podcast t-shirt, and you can just send a couple calls.
That'll work. And the only thing you have to do is kill a turkey and send me a picture. Yeah. How about that?
That's the hard part.
Yeah.
That's a great tribute question.
That's the easy part.
That was a great trivia question.
Yeah.
Hey, I do have one more thing to say about spitting feathers in my turkey audio.
Yeah.
My webpage, wildtalker.com. That's WILDTALKER, wildtalker.com. We're going to post about 4 hours of free downloadable sounds. Everything, hawks, owls, crows, affiliated woodpeckers, turkeys. It'll all be on there for everybody to listen to and enjoy.
Awesome.
Yeah. So when we're sitting in the office while everybody's out turkey hunting, we can put that on and it'll put our mind at ease.
Be relaxing.
Yeah. Get you in the mood, man.
Look, guys, I'm going to just tell you, Mike Batty's been around a long time. He is a great guy. He's a wealth of knowledge.
No doubt.
He has studied these turkeys and these sounds and the acoustics. And it's a really.
The scientist. No doubt about it.
He really is. Very interesting guy.
You know, I think the reason that Toxie did give me my first nickname, which was the Mad Scientist.
Uh-huh.
And when I was doing the Slate and the RX1 project, I called up Toxie. You know, Toxie is, there's something about people like me and Toxie who create things or find a passion for something and pursue it. And when I was talking about, you know, changing the molecular structure of the latex and using graphite was the highest conducer of musical vibration. I'll make the first graphite game call. You know, he pegged me as being, you know, a diehard researcher and
innovator,
trying to do things better. And then not having a job for almost 40 years that was basically working in a royalty business. So I had months and months and years that I could go out and record turkeys, and all the knowledge that I did, because I didn't have a day job. You guys are working a day job. I didn't have a day job. I've just been doing this forever. And I love to be able to impart whatever I can. And then too, I think that like Tom Kelly's effect, and I think Lovett Williams with the voice and vocabulary of the wild turkey. One thing I want to make note of, because I think you'll find this interesting. Do you know when Dr. Lovett Williams wrote the book, The Voice and Vocabulary of the Wild Turkey? There's two things about that book. Number one, he doesn't mention cutting. Hmm. Cutting was not a vocal in his book.
Huh.
Okay. That was not an identified sound. And listen to this. In the book, he says he does not know the origin of what is producing the drumming inside the turkey. You know, how is it being reproduced? So one of his theories, he said it could be vibrating tail feathers. This is the funniest story you ever want to hear. So he was out hunting. A man had a tame gobbler, and he went over to see it, and the gobbler was in the pen, didn't have a tail feather in his butt, and sitting there drumming up a storm. And Lovett said, well, drumming it from vibrating tail feathers, he got one.
You know, we ask about that a lot because it's just such a fascinating sound.
It is. And I thought it wasn't just tail feathers. I can't hear drumming, Mike. And the only turkey I've ever heard drum, Bobby and I were together in this turkey. How far was he from
He's me? Close.
I mean, 3 feet.
Yeah, maybe.
Could you have touched it?
I could have literally grabbed out. And when he drummed, I think the reason I saw his feathers shaking.
In that audio that I sent at the very beginning of it, it is a turkey that's spitting and drumming. And I upped the volume so you can actually hear it. People who say they can't hear drumming, sometimes is they don't know what to listen for, is because we're not really supposed to be able to track it to kill the turkey, right?
Yeah.
So, but the spit, you know, when they go...
I can hear the spit from forever.
There. And that's why you can course it, is because of the spit.
Yes.
But the drumming sound, if the turkey gets close enough, you'll feel it in your chest. It's something you actually may not be hearing, but you're feeling. If you're aware of that and listen to the recording, listen to the beginning of that audio. He is spitting and drumming. He's 10 feet from the microphone. Okay. And if you'll train your ears to listen, if you listen real hard, you might be able to pick it up if you try hard enough.
Yeah. I've damn sure been trying.
I heard it. Yeah. Richie, can you play that for us? It'd be a great chance. Okay, come on. You don't hear that, Lanny?
Yeah, I hear it. I just messed with you. I've heard it. The way I learned to hear it was listen to the stuff that Mike did. And from, you know, some of the stuff we've had with the camo cameras, with them being so close to microphones. But the only one I've ever heard in the wild was the turkey I'm talking about.
Bob Dixon could hear it for a million miles away.
Bobby Cole can hear it from a million miles away because he's like, man, coming. I'm like, whatever.
But I have a problem, though. Once I hear it, like one morning, the next morning, I think I'm hearing it everywhere.
Oh, right. Maybe that's what it is. Then.
Yeah, it's like, is that a 18-wheeler changing gears 5 miles away, or you know what?
And if you'll do this, because it's only 60 seconds, but if you will play the intro to my audio, I did that. So I was trying to paint a picture of an introduction to the audio samples, and I'm pretty proud of it. I still. Did a long time ago, but if you'll play it, it's pretty interesting to listen to. Listen to the different sounds. Play it one more time.
Here we go. That's how I yell. Hey, you hear well the wings. You know, it's people are not flapping anymore.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, some people still flap.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I do too. Mike, we have enjoyed having you.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Really, it's interesting.
It was an honor.
That's a special one.
Yeah, it is.
Of course, he's retired, and he's kind of got that look in his eye like, I'm going turkey hunting this afternoon, so I know he needs to go. That's what you're doing, isn't
That's
it?
What I'm planning on.
Well, good luck, Carson. Mike, thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for recording all this stuff. I wouldn't know what a turkey sounded like when I was early age or not.
Yeah.
Mike, we have a lot of respect for you. Guys can go to wildtalker.com. And check out some of the offerings that he and his son-in-law, Rob, have. And I tell you what, Brent Rogers' book, Yelp Gobble, Inc., has a chapter on Mike Batty. And guys, y'all ought to check that out. I think you could probably go to Amazon and pick that up.
It give his email guess. Address too again.
Yeah, it's smokeinstrut@icloud.com. All right. Carson, great to see you. Mike, thank you for that fantastic trivia question. Yeah, you may have worked your way into being the permanent trivia question guru.
Oh, nice.
Thank you, sir.
There you go. All right, Lanny.
Yeah.
Here we go. Another week.
I like it.
Dudley, get after him. We want to hear Turkey Story next week. Yeah. All right, guys. Looking around the room. Thank you, Carsey. Richie, thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Why don't you say goodbye, Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Richie.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.